The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, your Seattle Seahawks podcast by 12s for 12s, with your hosts, Adam Emmert.
You know what you do when life gives you lemons? You don't make lemonade. You kick life in the balls, and you demand it gives you something better, like bacon.
Bacon's delicious.
And Brandon Schultz.
If you want to put your money toward helping this team win, buy a ticket to the game on Sunday and bring your adult voice and scream your adult brains out. That will make 10 times more the difference.
Go Hawks!
On a quest to own the West, Yippee-ki-yay, we make the ground shake on game day 12-10. Yay's feeling it is vital, the Seahawks coming to take division titles. We are Coach Carroll, cause he's in, I'm in, we all in.
Welcome to episode 100 of the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz, and joining me this week, the envelope, please. Joining me, as always, my good buddy, Jared Tim. I have to apologize. It's my good buddy, Adam Emmert.
After 100 episodes, you're going full on Steve Harvey on me here. Like, I mean, I feel, well, at least I'm the ultimate winner.
Adam, it was on the card. It was written on the card. What can I say?
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, I don't know if you saw the picture of the card, but I could see how we got it confused with the way that it was lined out. Like, I really can.
Yeah. I know. I feel bad for the guy. I hate to joke at his expense, but, you know.
I don't. No, everybody's fair game. Like, if you're going to say something stupid on live TV, I mean, expect it. Because, I mean, we say stupid crap on here all the time, and I fully expect people to, you know, make me feel just as lousy as I ought to about those things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's what we're going to do here. Episode 100 is no different.
But episode 100, Brandon, and I think that it is fitting that we celebrate episode 100 when the Seahawks lock up a spot to go to the playoffs. And I don't know. I don't know if you've heard this stat. I mean, there's a lot of those made up stats around, you know, that you hear all the time, Brandon.
All stats are made up.
Yeah, well, I mean,
at least 75% of them are.
Yeah, some of them are like, you know, this guy threw 4 touchdowns in 7 different games all west of the Mississippi, always on an odd day. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, it's some of those. But here's one stat that is very important. And I don't know if you knew this stat, Brandon, but every year that we've done the podcast, the Seahawks have gone to the Super Bowl and they are in the tournament.
That's right.
So I think it is fitting for episode 100 that they locked it up.
You know, it is. It is. Back in as a wild card, got that locked up. A little bit of a downer that also the Cardinals win the NFC West. They could have waited a week, you know, just to have us at least enjoy our playoff berth glory for 1 week without having, you know, that slight down note added to it. But that's okay.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Brandon, with the Cardinals winning the NFC West. That does feel a little dirty. Nobody likes to see the division crown leave Seattle, no doubt about it. But let them have it for a year. Okay, enjoy, Cardinals, because, I mean, that's going to be about the highlight of your year after you have your first-round loss after, well, I guess second round if you're counting the bye that they most likely will have here going into the playoffs. But first game loss in the playoffs, how about that?
And if we get to exact our revenge in the playoffs, then all the better.
Exactly. So an interesting week in football, another big win by the Seahawks. Pro Bowl nominations came out this week as well, Brandon. I think we both have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, we'll talk about Pro Bowl.
Yeah, we'll talk a little of that and then maybe get into this Rams matchup that's coming up here. Everybody's favorite team to play if you're a Seahawks fan.
And also I want to talk about that Russell to Doug connection that just keeps on rolling. Those guys just they are in sync, and that is clear.
Oh man, it's unbelievable. That chemistry has definitely blossomed to its fullest potential over the last 4 weeks, or 4 weeks, that's for sure.
And the other thing we're going to do, Adam, we're going to use the C word on the show today. Pete Carroll hates the C word, and we'll discuss that.
Christmas?
Hey, there's lots of C words. That's if that's a C word in your book, then maybe we can talk about that. But there's a different one that Pete Carroll heavily has some dislike for, apparently.
Okay, because Christmas is nearly a slur to me, man. Like, after doing Santa Claus pictures in the mall for half a decade, I'm not a fan. Not a fan of the holiday anymore.
I could see how that would sour you with the Christmas pictures with the kids lined up all day long. And actually, you know, having to try and make all those crying kids sitting on a stranger's lap focus on the camera, that would be infuriating.
In the mall?
Yeah.
Like day in, day out, in the mall where there's no windows. You can't see outside. You're just in this dark, stupid building of consumerism all day, and all these people doing all this shallow crap to celebrate some holiday, and then you gotta chuck some kid on a guy in a velvet suit with chuck him on their lap with a beard, say, now talk to this stranger and smile. And like, it doesn't, no, I'm
now,
over it.
Now, were
I'm
you
over
one
it. And
of
then
the
having
one...
to deal with all the craptastic parents who are all PO'd because their kid doesn't look like, you know, it's a $100 portrait and their $10 freaking picture at the mall. It's in the mall. So I'm over it.
So were you one of the photographers that had to also dress up in the elf suit too?
No, we did not. I just had to, you know, half of those bad Santa things. Like, those things are, it's a cliche for a reason. It's a cliche for a reason. I'll just put it that way. We had some interesting experiences. Because I'll tell you what, our contract said you had to have real bearded Santas, like, couldn't wear the fake beard.
Well, yeah.
So you find me guys in their 60s with a full white beard, with nothing but time, that just want to come into the mall and sit there in a fuzzy velvet suit and, you know, listen to kids yammer on all day. I promise you, it's not going to be the best and the brightest of society, all right? You're lucky if you find some guy that's stumbling across the bridge, you know, at bar time, and he's got a big white beard, and he agrees to do it for the next 3 days. Like, that's your best hope.
Your talent pool is limited by looks.
Oh, God.
Well, on that note, happy holidays and Merry Christmas to everybody listening.
Yeah, that too.
Let's get into the show, Adam, because it is episode 100. We have a lot to review from the game, and we have a 30-13 win over the Cleveland Browns this past Sunday. Let's get into it.
All right, man. Well, another one of these fun games that we've had over the last few weeks. Where it really never was in doubt. I mean, I guess the Seahawks got down early 7-0 with that big drive that the Browns put on right out of the gate.
Yeah, how about that very first? Well, the first quarter total was two drives, one from each team. You had the Browns driving down on their opening possession. Gosh, it was, you know, double-digit number of plays. They took up 7-8 minutes off the clock. And at that point, you're going, wait a second, these Browns, they may have come to play today. This could be interesting. And the Seahawks, they come right back.
Yeah, and Johnny Manziel looked very slippery. Like, early in the game, you thought it might be difficult to kind of keep him under control. And of course, the first touchdown was to a tight end. Like,
of course.
There was that, too. Yeah,
of course.
You're like, oh, great. Here we go. Here we go.
Yeah, but 14 plays, 6 first downs. It ends with that touchdown to Barnage. And, the Seahawks, they know that the Browns came to play, and they bounce back with a 15-play drive of their own. Also, 6 first downs, 80 yards, all finished off with a touchdown to that tandem that we've been seeing over the past couple of weeks, Russell Wilson to Doug Baldwin.
Cleveland starts to walk up, and they're going to blitz. Russell, look out, going to dump it over the top. Got Doug Baldwin in the back of the end zone. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks! There is no answer to the Russell Wilson, Doug Baldwin connection for touchdowns. Baldwin now with his 12th touchdown reception of the season, and the Seahawks are a point away from tying this one up.
It was funny because Jared's texting me all through the Broncos game how Brock was lighting it up through the first half, and he's like, now 3 scores, now 4. Like, he's all excited, right?
And I bet he was.
All I had to text back was, oh, ho-hum, Doug Baldwin with, you know, just 2 touchdowns already. Just a typical day for Dougie Fresh. He's like, well, he better against that team. Well, no, he's been doing it against all the teams.
Yeah.
For a number of weeks now.
Pittsburgh, Minnesota.
This has really become a pedestrian day for Doug Baldwin, a couple of touchdowns.
Yeah, it's just what he does. He catches touchdowns and he makes tiptoe catches along the sidelines. That's just what Doug Baldwin does.
And his route running has gotten so much better this year. He really heard one receiver, a former receiver, one of the analysts talking about it. And he really attributed it to the fact that Doug has worked so hard on his route running and it's become a lot more angular. And his cuts are just a lot crisper. And so they really felt like what he reminded them of was Steve Smith, of all people. Maybe a little bit in demeanor as well when it's all said and done. But yeah, scores the first two touchdowns on the day, just catching dimes from Russell yet again.
Yeah, if you have a short, excellent route running, touchdown catching receiver, he's probably going to get compared to Steve Smith. That's just who you. That's the go-to comparison for that that prototype, right?
Well, especially when he wears 89, and you know his nickname is Angry Doug.
Right.
Like all those things kind of sync up a little bit there.
Yeah, because we were comparing Tyler Lockett to Steve Smith. It's okay if you have two Steve Smiths on your team. That's if you're going to pick a guy to have multiples of, not a future Hall of Famer, not a bad guy to have.
I swear to God, if you gave me 22 Steve Smiths and said, just go out there and win ball games, you're going to win ball games.
You would wreck the league.
They'd find a way.
You would wreck the league. Either that or it would turn into hockey, like, with the brawls.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be pretty funny. But, yeah, I mean, Doug Baldwin really just having a monster year. And really, the receiving core as a whole, I know I texted you during the game, Jermaine Kearse needs to get a lot of love today. I mean,
yes.
A guy that has really shown up for the last few weeks, but really showed out again this week, making tough catches. I think he only had the one drop. That sort of thing happens down then. But man, you know, critical third down catches over and over and over again, Jermaine Kearse.
Well, and one of the biggest plays of the game, too, that play right before the end of the second quarter, where Russell Wilson throws it to Kearse and he just runs downfield. He ends up getting the face mask call drawn on him, and it gives the Seahawks an extra play at the end of the half.
This is wide to the far side, and the Browns are going to rush four. Now the throw goes far side. It's caught by Kearse. He's got a lot of room. He's down to the 30, down to the 25. He fights. He breaks free from one tackle. Now there's a late flag. Might be a face mask penalty. Down inside the 20, and so the Seahawks are going to get a free play, and they're going to be down inside perhaps the 15-yard line. At least you can get a field goal and get 3 points out of this.
And here comes
Pressing
John Ryan.
Face mask. Defense. Number 22. Penalty is half the distance to the goal. First down, Seattle. By rule, we will extend the half by one play.
You know, kind of puts the game out of reach early, and I could see how that would be a little bit demoralizing to a team that, oh, hey, looks like we're going to hold them within seven. Oh, no, we just gave them another field goal. Now they're up by 10.
Yep, 20-10 at that point. And look, Jermaine Kearse had 7 receptions for 110 yards, and that's not even taking into account that penalty you just talked about that he was able to get on the Browns to put him in the field goal range. I mean, that's extra hidden yardage right there. And just a monster day for him, you know, leading the Seahawks in both receptions and yardage for this week. And really, this trio of receivers, I saw a little article written by Shal Kapadia. I'm going to screw it up every week. And basically, excellent writer. This dude knows what he's talking about. I really enjoy his articles. He's top-notch.
Yeah, if you've conditioned yourself to not pay attention to ESPN articles based on the writer that was there over the past few years, mm-hmm. you can just go ahead and start working that back in to check ESPN.com for Shial's work, because it's worth checking out.
Yeah, and really, he was talking about just how efficient this group has been, this offense has been, when they run out the personnel of those three wide receivers, Kearse, Lockett, and Baldwin, one tight end and one running back. And the numbers are really off the charts. It's been a very effective formation for them in just grouping of personnel. And I think what you're seeing is them using that so much more to compensate for the idea of not having Jimmy Graham, because we saw a lot of two tight end sets earlier in the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's a lot of just single tight end, you know, with Jimmy or with Luke Wilson or Cooper Helfitt blocking
yeah.
a little bit more. And look, you can't argue with the results. It's actually kind of crazy that the injury of Jimmy Graham has led to using this personnel grouping more, and that has led to the passing game just going to a whole nother height.
Yeah, no, it's and Jermaine Kearse, I can't, like you said, can't say enough about his game this week. 8 targets, 7 receptions, 110 yards. Most of that came in the first half. You know, one play that I, apart from the one where he got the face mask at the end of the first half there, was the one where Russell Wilson kind of threw it up really high, and he went up to get it and kind of, you know, put himself in a vulnerable position, came down, got hammered, able to hang on to the ball. And, yeah, Jermaine Kearse with the catch there.
Lockett wide to the near side. Baldwin slotted on the far side inside of Kearse. Empty backfield on 3rd and 7. Russell Wilson takes the snap. 3-man rush. Has some time. Still looking left. Now throws. Got a man wide open. Kearse leaping to the sky. Brings it down. Gibson, the safety, was out there. Could not make the play. Another spectacular catch by the former Husky, Jermaine Kearse. A 22-yard game.
I think Jermaine Kearse is a little like this entire team. Like, the first half of the season, they're just not going to play well. Like, it's just they're just not going to. So, just don't expect it. Just don't even worry about it. But they'll play awesome second half of the year when you go into the playoffs. I mean, think of all the clutch catches he's had over his career and his clutchiness factor. And you're starting to see it come through towards the end of the season when the Seahawks really needed games. And I think part of it, too, is how much they're using Tyler Lockett out there and how good luck covering all three of those guys at once. I mean, Tyler Lockett can run by anybody right now.
Well, and speaking of running by people, that's exactly what he did on his way into the end zone. The very first play of the fourth quarter, a touchdown catch from Russell Wilson.
Jackson stays in the backfield. Russell takes the shotgun snap. Looks, fires down the far side, got his man. Lockett's got it in the end zone. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks. Tyler Lockett, how do you do it? Week in and week out, he just gets behind the defenders. And that time for 27 yards and another Seahawks score. It's Seattle 26 and Cleveland 10.
So, Brandon, I don't know if you had seen the sound effects of Russell Wilson from the 49ers game a few weeks ago.
No.
And, well, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I suggest everybody watch it. And actually, Danny Kelly of Field Goals came out and wrote an article about this. Great minds think alike, because the second I saw that touchdown to Tyler Lockett this game, mm-hmm. I thought of that sound effects from a couple games previously.
Oh, interesting.
And basically, Russell Wilson was in the pocket, and there was a guy coming from his left just slightly, and all he would have had to do, and this is in the 49ers game, mm-hmm. is just, you know, scooted up in the pocket just a little bit, bought himself just a titch extra time, and he completes the pass. But instead, he kind of stands his ground, which, you know, we've all been railing on him to stay in the pocket anyways, right? So he's kind of doing it at this point, but can't quite wait for Lockett to come open, and overthrows him just a bit. And he goes down and sits on the bench, and he's talking with Darrell Bevell, and they're going over that play. And Russell basically is like, man, that should have been a touchdown. And Bevell was like, yeah. That should have been a touchdown, Russ. And he's like, all I needed was just an extra half a second. And Bevell looks at him and goes, well, you know, you could have created it.
Yeah.
And basically what he was saying was, if he had just moved up slightly and just moved over to his right, he would have bought him that extra half a beat for the route to come open. And what was cool about the touchdown from this last game to Tyler Lockett, it's basically the same exact situation. And what does he do? He slides in the pocket just a little bit. He buys himself that extra beat, and boom, right on the money. Touchdown, Tyler Lockett. And that's the growth that we've seen out of Russell Wilson this year in the pocket.
Yeah, and now I know the article that you're talking about with Danny Kelly, because that's the exact point, right, is how Russell Wilson has changed to this point to be able to make plays like that happen.
Yeah, exactly. Just having a little more patience, and he looks a little more like Drew Brees when he's doing that. You know what I mean? Like, the idea that instead of resulting, or, you know, just going back and reverting to doing double spin moves and breaking dudes' ankles, like, he's just subtly slide in the pocket, buy himself an extra half a beat, and then hit the open guy down the field. And it's really impressive. It's a testament to his growth. But again, this is just year 4 for him. We forget that so often.
Yeah.
This is just year 4 for him. Drew Brees, was his shoulder was spaghetti in year 4. Like, I mean, it took him a while to get to that point.
Right.
He's just getting there.
Yeah, it really wasn't until he went to New Orleans before he became the Drew Brees that we know. And I have to wonder though, Adam, are you critiquing, like, are you being critical of the double spin move, the double pirouette? Because I thought that was beautiful.
I've never seen anything like that on a football field.
No.
I really haven't. I truly haven't. And look, I've seen all the Fran Tarkenton highlights. I get it. Like, he kind of was that whirling kind of player as well. But it's the next generation. It's on a whole nother level. I've never seen a dude, and he spun the same way twice. Like, he didn't spin different directions.
No, it was the same way.
Yeah. And again, it resulted in an incompletion, but it got him out of trouble, so it resulted in an incompletion instead of a sack. And it's those little things, man. If a guy can do that to you, and he can sit in the pocket and throw darts and be the number one passer from the pocket in the league, good luck. Good luck.
Yeah.
I'll take my chances against anybody. I don't care who we're playing, where we're playing them. It don't make no, never mind. Russ is going to carve you up like a turkey.
Well, I want to talk about the running game too, Adam. But before we do that, I want to read this email from Pat in Edmonton. It says, hello, Brandon and Adam. Congratulations on your 100th show. I vote you both better at life for this week. Sorry I haven't written since episode 56 and our mild disagreement over the status of agility dogs. A quick update on my Roomba, my 11-month-old Montana puppy. He is a wonderful little gentleman and showing signs of becoming a brilliant agility athlete. But I do have some football-related items. Number one, I can hardly wait for your take on Kristen Michael. With Beast Mode and the baby beast Rawls out, I'm delighted with how well Michael played. I'm also proud of our team for giving him another chance and how Kristen seems to be finally getting it this time around. I have to admit, though, that I still hold my breath every time he touches the ball. Speaking of, you know, potential fumbles, I guess.
Yep.
or it could be because of waiting to see great things, because, you know, we do that too. Number two, with all the talk of elite this and second tier that, how would you grade our O-line right now, especially since they seem to be getting very good at creating that pocket thingy? Can I also pose the hypothetical question that if the Dallas Cowboys had our rushing offense numbers and Romo had the exact same passing stats as Russell over the last five games, would the entire football world be cooing about the best O-line in football? Finally, Adam, last week you said sideline reporters were basically useless. As a fellow curmudgeon, I can only agree with you 99% on this issue. That 1% that makes them actually worthwhile can be found by going no further than the Aaron Andrews, Richard Sherman gold from 2 years ago. In fact, if we gave the sideline reporters even more latitude, imagine the fun we could have. How either wildly entertaining or totally absurd would Odell Beckham's thoughts be on Josh Norman? I'm thinking tabloid gold. I hope you're handing out multiple do-betters on this foolishness and a few the catfishes. I didn't like Beckham's Zidane impression one bit. It bothers me that the stupidity has completely overshadowed an otherwise awesome football game and the better-than-average performance of Carolina's second-tier quarterback Cam Newton. I'm actually hoping Carolina is the first team to go 16-0 in the regular season, then 1-and-done in the playoffs. Anyways, Merry Christmas, and thank you for the wonderful podcast.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for the wonderful email. Lots of stuff to unpack there, right, Brandon?
But, oh, yeah.
First, let me eat some crow on the Siragusa thing.
Oh, I thought you were going to go to the agility dogs first, but okay.
Oh, yeah, dog. Yeah, I was confused. I kind of glossed over it because he said something about athlete with that. And
right.
It just didn't compute. I mean, they're dogs. But the thing is that the Siragusa thing.
He was good this game, right?
Okay, well, he had one redeeming moment. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
Okay. When Brandon,
I think I have audio of this particular moment, Adam.
Empty backfield for Johnny Manziel, who lines up in the shotgun with two receivers far side. Seattle, four-man rush. Manziel gets hit right in the middle of the pack, and he is dropped. Brandon Mebane comes right up the gut. There is the shimmy shake. It scared children half to death. What a sight it is. Brandon Mebane, he looked like he was untouched.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it's
That's
a
lot of meat going in the wrong direction.
It really is, let me tell you. An 8-yard loss on the play.
So, yep, that's the play. That's the play, the Mebane sack. And then he comes out and he's doing the belly roll, right? The fat man dance.
Uh-huh.
And I'll give him some credit. They cut down to Saragusa, and he puts the soundtrack to the belly dance. And it was hilarious. And look, I'm not a fan overall, but that was funny. 1% of the time, I'm with you, man. Sideline reporters have something to add to the game.
So, and this is the point where I'm going to use the C word here for a moment, Adam. And I know Coach Carroll won't like it. He took issue with this particular word in the press conference. And with regard to the running game, this running back by committee. Committee, that word that Pete Carroll doesn't like. I don't understand it. I don't know why. I don't know why it has a negative connotation. But somebody asked him about how this running back by committee would work. And he said they didn't know that word. But what did you think? And that's another point to Pat's email. What did you think of Kristen Michael this game?
Yeah, he called it more running back by competition.
Well, that was something that Brock on the Brock and Sock show brought up to him with the running back by competition, knowing that Carroll doesn't like the committee word.
Right. So you saw as Kristen Michael began to look like he was the guy that was a little more consistent in the run game, him get a few more carries. And a couple things about Kristen Michael's performance. First off, I would say he ran real hard.
Yeah.
I mean, he ran with kind of like Rawls has been running throughout the year. That's the first time I've seen that kind of effort out of him, run in and run out. Secondly, I thought it was really interesting the idea that Earl Thomas had kind of gotten in his ear and told him, look, knock off all the nonsense after a 5-yard run or whatever. Take all that emotion, all that anger, all of that celebration, whatever it is, contain it, and then take it out on the next run.
Mm.
I thought that was very interesting. The other thing is, you know, people are real excited. He played okay. I mean, it was an okay game,
yeah,
and it was an average game, but that's all we need right now as we tread water trying to get Marshawn back. And look, that's good for him. I'm glad he's getting the second chance. I don't know how much he's changed personality-wise. I know one thing he won't change, and that's what hand he holds the ball in. It's always going to be the right hand.
Always the right hand.
You'll hold your breath about those fumbles for sure. But look, solid performance, a good start. We'll see what happens against the Rams. I don't know.
I think he's just better off wearing the number 32. He should have made that change a long time ago. You know, can't wear 33 because Kelsey McCray's got it. And so he's got number 32 now. And, you know, that's one less number that he has to carry.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe makes him a little lighter on his feet. Now, Pat also mentioned the offensive line there, Brandon. How would you rank this offensive line? And he mentioned, what if Romo was playing with these guys right now? Would everybody be, you know, talking Tony Romo for MVP at this point? I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think there's one critical issue when it comes to the offensive line, and it's not necessarily performance of a quarterback throwing yards or the running game putting yards on the board. You know, it's whether or not they can stay in front of the guys that they're supposed to block. And while they have been doing a better job than that, I don't know if you put them at that Dallas Cowboy type level of guys who are just, you know, rock solid, able to stay in front of the guy that their assignment is. You still see mistakes here and there. They are probably NFL average, just because you see a lot of teams that have struggles at the offensive line. And when you combine NFL average with an above average run game and an elite quarterback in Russell Wilson, it makes everything better.
And that's just it. I agree with you wholeheartedly. They're about a league average offensive line. And that's what's unbelievable. They were so bad. They were so bad at one point that when you watch a league average line, you're like, hallelujah, this is a holy grail. They're playing awesome. They might be the number one in the league. So I understand where Pat would get that idea. But the thing is, no, this is just acceptable. And this is what this team can achieve when they get just acceptable play out of that offensive line. And that to me is a huge part of the success. And no, they're not on Tony or Dallas Cowboy level. And look, I don't know. Sure, they probably get a little more attention if they played in Dallas, because, you know, Dallas gets a lot of attention, but they're not on that level yet.
No, and there was an interesting article by HawkBlogger that showed just how much these offensive linemen have improved from the beginning of the season, and they've gone from being among the last in each one of their categories as far as offensive linemen go, and up until you see Gary Gilliam improving. He's up. He was down toward the bottom. Now he's, you know, among the top, you know, 10, 15 in the league. And when you make that kind of a jump, like you said, it's you're seeing the benefits.
It really is amazing. And that's why the old adage, it all starts in the trenches, 100% true. It really is. And that's why I think people like myself have had such a hard time with the way they've built this team, where they skimp so hard on the offensive line. And obviously, you know, give fewer and fewer craps, it seems, every year about the offensive line. But it's coming together. Give Tom Cable some credit. Give Darrell Bevell some credit. And I think part of it is the way that they've shifted the offense around since the bye week. You've seen a real change in the way that they're playing on offense, and a little bit more of the quick strike and quick passing game from Russell Wilson and crew.
Yeah, if I'm Patrick Lewis, I'm hoping this is a contract year, because that really coincided well with making the switch from Drew Nowak to Patrick Lewis. It's almost 10 points a game difference with him at center. So, yeah, there's the offensive line. To go back to the running backs, you know, with no Marshawn Lynch, no Thomas Rawls, and they're able to put up 180 rushing yards on the board. You know, Kristen Michael, 84 yards. Russell Wilson, 46 yards. Bryce Brown, 43. It was a pretty impressive and well-rounded performance among those guys.
It really was. And again, against a rushing defense that doesn't rank very highly either.
That's okay.
Hard to get too terribly excited. So yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, a good, well-rounded performance, but again, against a defense and rushing that's, well, whatever. But let's not overlook the fact that Scott McLuhan, former Seahawk executive who is now the general manager of the Washington Redskins, gave his buddy John Schneider, you know, a little help from the homies there. Like that was a little up by releasing Kristen Michael so that we could pick him up. Don't underestimate that relationship and the idea that it's them being as tight as they are that has allowed us to bring Kristen Michael back in.
Yeah, it was John Clayton that kind of started that rumor or had that report, right, that might have been the case.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question. When Scott McLuhan, a lot of people know the story of Scott McLuhan, but he was at one point with the 49ers when they were drafting Patrick Willis and Vernon Davis in that core group that made their kind of nice run.
Mm-hmm.
And then alcoholic, had a real tough time with his drinking, lost his job, was out of the NFL for a couple of years, was just a consultant. And the guy that took a chance on him to bring him back into the league was John Schneider when he took over as the GM for the Seahawks.
Yeah.
And McLuhan was a guy in Schneider's ear when they've had all these successful drafts. Building off of that success, he was given the Redskins general manager job. So I promise you, when John Schneider called up and said, "Yo, Scott, you know, hook a homie up," he hooked a homie up.
Yeah, that seemed like it may have been the case. So
that's how it works in this league.
Relationships are important, whether you're in the NFL or whether you're just doing your day-to-day job. You got to have the hookup, and sometimes it works out for you.
Exactly. So we'll see how Kristen Michael does next week against the Rams. That'll be really interesting to see. Obviously a stouter defense in that sense. But let's talk a little bit about our defense in this last game, Brandon. The Seahawks defense, I felt underwhelmed. I'm not going to lie. I felt underwhelmed. I know they only gave up 13 points. I know they only gave up a handful of yards. I get that. But it still felt like they were just getting chewed up a little bit. Didn't it to you?
I guess I'm not going to be. I can't be too critical when it's only 13 points and they hold them to 10 in the first half and then only 3 in the second half. I thought, again, it's the tight end. And the Browns have one of the more outstanding tight ends in the league, right? So it just goes to show that they can have that type of connect. That's still an issue for the Seahawks, and one that they're going to have to get work out as they go in the playoffs, right? Because look at the playoff teams that they have an opportunity to go up against. There's a lot of dangerous tight ends in those teams, and when you have, you know, a guy like Jeremy Lane on Barnage, that's not a good matchup.
Well, no, because Lane is a slider guy, but I mean, in all fairness, I mean, Barnage did only have 3 receptions for 29 yards when it was all said and done.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so there's that. Yeah, but it just felt like there was a lot of third downs given up. I think that was kind of the area where it felt like the Seahawks were getting eaten up just a little bit, is just in third down percentage. I'm trying to look up the thing right here. 6 for 12, so 50% on third down for the Browns throughout the game. I think that's where my problem was.
That's a little bit higher than you might want.
50% is good. If you can convert on 60% of your, or 50% of your third downs, you're having a good day.
Yeah, I mean, you want it more down toward 30, right? That's kind of the...
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, still 161 yards overall. So when you take into account Barnage had 29, you know, what's that? That's almost, well, not quite a quarter, maybe 20%. But, you know, it's just Manziel didn't have that great of a day, really. I mean, he was efficient, I suppose, relatively up until toward the end of the game. I mean, for a while there, he was kind of hanging in there with Russell in terms of efficiency, but it was all short stuff, right?
Yeah, for the most part, you know, a little pitch and catch and let the guy run around a little bit. But I thought Manziel had a strong showing for himself. This is not a pushover defense.
No.
And it's not like he's playing with world beaters around him. So I thought he acquitted himself very well throughout the game. And it's going to be, look, I feel like next year for the Browns, it's going to be Johnny Manziel in, Mike Pettine out. That's really how it feels to me at this point. So I guess we'll see. But look, the defense, they came to play. You saw that front four get after Johnny really well. Just Johnny's elusive. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that was the difference in the game. A lot of their success was based off those extended plays that Johnny was able to create.
Yeah, and he was able to make guys miss, able to get outside the pocket. And there was one time, though, a guy we should give a little bit of credit to for the game he had, Marcus Burley, you know, able to run down Johnny Manziel on the sack.
Manziel out of the shotgun with 3 receivers near side. Here comes the blitz. Manziel's got a scramble. He's being chased by KJ. Far side. Now he stops. Tries to cut back. He gets hit. And he is dropped back at the 19-yard line. Flying in there to get to the tackle is Burley on the sack. Back near the 20. Manziel that time. All the legs in the world when the Seahawks run the house at you, they're not going to save you.
Yeah, that was fun. I mean, it's always fun to watch sacks happen for your defense. I always enjoy that.
Especially when it's a corner and, it, you know, they go all-out blitz. They rush 6 guys, and Manziel able to make a couple guys miss, turns around, and there's Burley right in his face.
Hello! that was pretty fun right there. But defensively, a solid game.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Again, the game was never in question, and there wasn't any huge mistakes. You know, there was the one long run by Duke Johnson, and you know, the 39-yard run where Earl Thomas was able to get him out of bounds. But I mean, really, Duke Johnson didn't put up that many yards on the ground. Only 4 attempts. He had one catch where he went down the sideline for 22 yards. So really, he was the big part. Probably the biggest part of the Browns' offense.
Yeah, probably. And that's the two things, right? Tight ends and the little check down pass to halfbacks out of the backfield. Those are the two things.
And special teams. You know what? Special teams was a positive for the Browns, which would be negative for the Seahawks special teams. Their kickoff returner, man, he had a 53-yard return. He had 159 return yards overall. That was a little bit tough to see, right? That put the team in good field position. It allowed him to actually get scores on those couple drives.
Yeah, one of those, he got around like 3 dudes. Like, I couldn't quite understand that. It was like Cassius Marsh and 2 other guys, and they're just all standing right there, and he just runs around them like they're traffic cones. I couldn't understand that one for the life of me. So hopefully we get to some of the coverage issues figured out as we move forward. I'm sure they will. Special teams has been fairly consistent all year, so I don't worry too much about that. But a complete game by the Seahawks. Russell Wilson having yet another one of his amazing games along this stretch. And what is it now? The 5 games with 19 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. The only guy to ever toss 3 a game without a pick over 5 games west of the Mississippi with his hair on fire.
You ruined my trivia question, Adam. I was going to throw a trivia question at you, but you just answered it. And that was, how many players in NFL history have thrown three or more touchdowns in five straight games, no interceptions? You know, the list of quarterbacks who have thrown three or more touchdowns in five straight games, if you allow for interceptions, that list is still Dan Marino, Steve Young, Aaron Rodgers, and there's another guy in there that's like Brett Favre or somebody. Yeah. It's still
or Brady or something.
Yeah. Guys that have thrown three or more touchdowns. But out of those guys, out of those five guys, Russell Wilson's the only one to do it with no interceptions.
And what I love about that is, or what I don't love, I say that sarcastically, is the idea that everybody's like, well, who has he done it against these last five games? Okay, fine. Who did Marino do it against? Who did Brady do it against? Who did Rodgers do it against? Nobody's looking that up and killing them for that. Yeah. Nope, just Russell.
Well, yeah, back in the day when you had Marino and the Dolphins and Steve Young and the 49ers, when they had no salary caps and they could just, you know, beef up their teams and go against and beat down everybody in their path. Yeah, that's a pretty fair argument, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But nope, nobody wants to get into that. That's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Right. Yeah. Well, then, that bothers me too. And two of those last five teams were legitimate playoff teams in the Steelers and the Vikings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that doesn't. It's who's it been against though, Brandon? I mean, come on. He's too short.
I know. It's too bad we don't have an elite quarterback, right? I wonder how many points we would have scored on the Browns if we had an elite quarterback.
Oh, man. I mean, probably 400. I mean, they're just barely compensating for this quarterback who's too short and not elite. So, yeah.
Well, I got another email here from John Davison. Adam says, hi, fellas. Well, I thought I would do something special on this day and ring up and leave you a message, but it has been engaged all day Monday, so I had to resort to email as usual. I like that they say engaged rather than busy.
It was confusing to me. I thought maybe he's getting married. Like, I didn't know.
I know when it said engaged in the subject of the email.
Brandon, you know, that word engaged is terrifying.
You almost didn't even read the email, right?
Yeah. I was like, oh no, I was going to fly to England and like just try to help a buddy out. But yeah.
John goes on to say, firstly, we are in the playoffs, so I'm really pleased about that. We seem to be racking up the injuries, though, so let's hope they all get back on the field as soon as possible. Any chance of an update? Secondly, I would just want to wish everyone who is a 12 a happy Christmas, especially your two good selves. I have to give special mentions to Barry the Redskin and also Craig Humphrey and the Hong Kong Hawk, who I never would have met without your program. Finally, huge congratulations on your 100th pod. Who would have thought this when you first started this? You have given a lot of people a great deal of pleasure, especially me, and taken my knowledge of football to a much higher level. So I thank you for that and hope you go from strength to strength. You still don't know how a gunner got his name, though, so you don't know everything. Go Hawks! From John. P.S. Thanks for saying I had fly tying expertise, but did you know I also have written a book on World War I? I haven't got your addresses now, so now that you've both moved, but send them to me and I'll post you a copy of the book.
Hell yeah, I'd be all about that because there's a lot of very interesting geopolitical things that went into the beginning of World War I, and depending on your perspective, it's hard to say exactly how that started. So I'd be very interested to read his book and see what his take is on that.
Yeah. Well, thanks, John. And as far as injury updates go, we talked a little bit of Marshawn Lynch that actually it's not sounding good for the Arizona game. He's still not back at practice. So it's kind of looking like it could be that first wild card game if he's going to be able to make it back. I don't know. Carroll's not sounding super optimistic when it comes to Lynch, I think. So I think we have to maybe start thinking about whether or not he's going to be back. Maybe start, you know, building our expectations right now that it's possible he might not be back. Cam Chancellor was out this game. He was listed as questionable, but then he was scratched to start the game. So I don't know quite yet. Do you know, Adam, if Chancellor is going to be back? We can loop back around on that one.
I don't know for sure, but I will say this. I once fell so hard in Butte, Montana on the ice. You know, I may have been drunk. Like, that may have had something to do with it. But totally messed up the tailbone area. Man, I can't imagine playing an NFL football game 1 or even 2 weeks after that. I mean, that's a tender deal. So yeah. I'll be shocked if we see him this next game. There's no way I could do it. But then again, I'm not a tough guy, so.
So, yeah, Chancellor has a tailbone issue. And then the other couple guys that were out this game, Jordan Hill, out with a toe. And it doesn't sound like there's a timeline quite yet for his return either. And then Anthony McCoy, tight end, who the Seahawks signed. And he's always kind of had injury issues. And there's no timeline back for him as well. So those are kind of the guys, right?
Yep, those are kind of the guys. And so we'll see. I mean, basically, the Hawks have a few injuries, no doubt. I mean, Jimmy going down and Marshawn going down were huge. But compared to everybody else, I mean, it seems fairly comparable, doesn't it? Like, I don't know that there's any one team you look at and go, dang, that team's real healthy right now.
No, there really isn't. And you saw it this last week with Arizona losing Tyron Matthew on the defensive side. You know, probably the best player on their defense so far this year, having, you know, defensive player of the year type season. And he goes down right before the playoffs. So Arizona hurting.
Oh, for sure. That's something I'd like to get into a little bit more on the pick show. So tune into that, because I think that is potentially a conference-changing injury.
Sure.
I really believe that.
Could be. And we play Arizona coming up the week after the Rams. So we'll get to see what they're all about then, depending on maybe how much of their team is sitting down, because that matchup with Green Bay for Arizona this weekend could play heavily as to what they do against the Seahawks the following week. But we'll get into that next week.
Yep. Sounds like a plan right there. So let's see. What else did we want to cover here, Brandon? There's a few things. I don't know if you had much more to say about the Browns game.
No, I think we should get into this Rams matchup.
Okay. I hate these games. I do. I hate it. I hate playing them twice a year. I'm sick and tired of it.
Yeah.
Like, I just really am. And I wonder if the team feels the same way. If inside the locker room, they look on the schedule and they go,
oh, the Browns again. Or the Rams again.
The Rams again. These guys? Really? Ugh.
Yeah, you know, their defense is still good. You know, their team, you know, when they want to play, seemingly, they can beat anybody, because you had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who were kind of cruising toward a potential playoff spot, depending on how things were to shake out with Minnesota. You know, if they continue to drop, Tampa Bay could have snuck into the playoffs. But they go into St. Louis, and I don't know if it was just that last game in the Edward Jones Dome, the potential last game, to where the team just decides that, okay, now we're going to play, now we're going to shut down this team that's kind of surging a little bit, and show what this team can be. And dang it, it had to happen right the week right before they come to Seattle, right?
Yeah, I'm fine with it happening the week before.
Yeah, not the week of.
Yeah, that sounds real nice, because we need to win out here to make sure to hang on to that 5 seed. I think that's extremely important, especially if there's a chance Beast comes back and we have a week, that first playoff week, that maybe he can't come back. So
yeah.
I think that holding on to that number 5 seed is really important in that way. But yeah, they played pretty well last week. But again, that's this Ram team, right? One great performance and then like 5 or 6 really mediocre ones.
Yeah.
And I don't see the Rams offense coming in. Let's talk about their offense first, because their defense really is their stronger side of the ball. No doubt. We all know that. But I mean, Case Keenum coming in with, Tavon Austin is actually having the best season of his career.
Yeah.
That, you know, guy that you definitely have to account for,
mm-hmm.
and used a little bit like we tried to use Percy when Percy was here. So that's, you know, it's basically screens, bubble screens, reverses to him, right, Todd Gurley right, Todd Gurley left, Case Keenum on a few play action passes, and that's their offense. And I think that is something that the Seahawks shouldn't have too difficult of a time game planning for. I mean, other than the fact that Jim Brown, I mean, Todd Gurley, the greatest running back ever, is in the backfield for this game.
Yeah, it's Todd Gurley is having a heck of a season, though, and he puts up games here and there. He's kind of been absent for a little while, mm-hmm. But came on, had a solid game against the Bucs.
It was solid, but again, this is one of those players that I don't understand exactly why they have so much hype around them. But man, he does anything that's at all good. And man, Deion Sanders will sit on NFL Network and talk about him for like 10 minutes, you know, like all those guys, they love them some Todd Gurley. And I'm not saying he's a bad player. He's a fine player, but there's a lot of, like, Doug Martin having an amazing season.
You don't hear anything about Doug Martin.
You haven't heard crap about Doug Martin all year. What is he, like second in the league in rushing or something like that?
Yeah, just got voted to the Pro Bowl. But so did Todd Gurley. He got a Pro Bowl vote.
I'm sure he did because he's the greatest ever. I mean, it is a popularity contest, the Pro Bowl, to a large degree. And we'll get into that a little later on down the line. But look, their offense, I'm not concerned about that. Their defense, while vaunted and really kind of held us in check, it made life miserable for Russell Wilson with 6 sacks in week one. Not the same defense. We're looking at some significant injuries on the Rams defense. One, Robert Quinn, that's what Elvin Ford would say, is out for the
year. Well, he had to break out a new impression for the show, the number 100,
yeah,
Adam.
Yeah, very, be very, very quiet because Robert Quinn's not going to be in this game. Yeah, he's out on IR for the year. So obviously a big playmaker and one of their leading sackers on that team. And it's on every level for them. Linebacker Alec Ogletree, who is a fast guy and was able to kind of contain Russell Wilson to a degree, out. You got their safety, McDonald, who's a good safety, out. So they have some significant injuries on every level of this defense. I don't think it's going to be nearly as stout as the first time we saw them. And I think we also know this offensive line is clicking a lot better than it was before. Now, Aaron Donald's a beast. It'll be really interesting to see how Britt, Lewis, and Sweezy hold up against Donald inside. He was just a menace against the Buccaneers.
Yeah, and one thing I guess that was a credit to Jameis in that game, Jameis Winston, is that they were able to get to the quarterback, you know, 12 quarterback hits in that game, but no sacks. So that kind of having Russell Wilson in the backfield, you got to know that he's going to escape some of those as well. But they spent a lot of time getting after the quarterback in that game. And I don't think that that's going to be any different in this game. We're going to see how this offensive line holds up against Aaron Donald, you know, Michael Brockers, Eugene Sims. You know, Sims had 3 quarterback hits, same with Donald in that last game. And I still, you know, despite the fact that they do have a few injuries on that line, they're still a dangerous team.
Yeah, and I think Hawk Blogger brought up a really interesting point in his little preview about the Rams, and basically the idea that the Seahawks are basically on fire when it comes to third down conversions right now.
They are.
Offense. And the St. Louis Rams are ranked number 3rd in stopping.
Number 3rd.
Or what's that?
Ranked number 3rd.
Ranked number 3rd, and the English don't make no never mind there. The 3rd at stopping the run on 3rd and short, and they are 1st in stopping 3rd and long conversions. So they're good on 3rd down defensively,
yeah.
And that's the money down. We talk about it all the time, and the Hawks have been on fire converting 3rd downs. That's going to be the tail of the tape at the end of the day right there.
Yeah, that's really what it's going to come down to, but I do like the fact that this game is in Seattle, because the Rams, while they seem to have the Seahawks number when it comes to games there, you know, they've played the team close every single time. The Seahawks, though, have been able to hang on to their games at home.
That's true. Traditionally, it has worked out well in Seattle. It's not the horror that is the Edward Jones Dome.
Right.
So I think that definitely works to their advantage. But a game that the Seahawks have to have, one of those tough divisional games. And look, if you talk about the quality opponent over the last few weeks, I know the Rams aren't world beater. They're, you know, 31st in the league at points per game, and they're just 31st in yards per game on offense. I know they don't have a great offense, but these are those games that are real litmus tests for a team going down the stretch. When you are playing a team that has so much familiarity with you and you have for them, that's what makes it tight year in and year out. And if the Hawks want to get to where they want to go, they need this one.
There's one thing going back to the Seahawks on defense in this game that I would really, if I were the one kind of making some just general plans for this game, I would have Richard Sherman on the left side in this game, not play him on the right side, because Case Keenum, just looking at where he tends to throw the ball, a lot of it's toward the middle of the field and the right side or the left side of the field, and not a whole lot of passes on the right side of the field. If he does, they tend to, if it's kind of in that short intermediate route, he's only had a couple deep passes that he's completed on the right side. He's more of a guy who's going to throw toward the left side of the field. So if you can do that, if you can have Richard Sherman on that left side, that would limit, I think, to where he might go with the ball. And then the other thing is getting pressure on him, because he is just night and day difference as a quarterback when you allow him time in the pocket and allow him to stand there, find a receiver, you know, 75%, able to complete 75% of his passes when you give him time. And then it's down to like 33% when you put pressure on him. It's just, it's night and day.
And that's why he's a backup quarterback.
Right.
And not that he's a bad backup. He's a quality backup quarterback. Yeah. But that's the difference between a backup quarterback and a starter. Look at the way Russell Wilson handled the pressure early in the year. Does he put up the numbers he does now? Absolutely not. But he was at least better than league average in his numbers. He was still putting up good numbers and conducting the offense down the field. Whereas Case Keenum can't do it. And just that's the difference between a starter and a backup. And yeah, I think if the Hawks get the kind of pressure that they got against the Browns this last week, man, they're gonna struggle. And look, their offensive line, again, not full of world beaters either.
No, and that's really been one of their biggest problems all year, and the problem with a lot of teams is that they don't have the offensive line to protect their quarterback. And yeah, it could be this could be another one of these games that we've seen from the Seahawks, right? Where we see them put up another 30 points.
I'd love it. 5 weeks in a row has been nice. I'll take six, though. I mean, that's like a six-pack.
Yeah.
Six-pack of 30-point games.
We need to get to the six-pack.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, Adam. Well, anything else you want to say on this, or do we want to talk Pro Bowl now or after the break?
Let's talk Pro Bowl now. Let's bust that out here real quick. Unless, I don't know, what do you want to do?
Let's talk Pro Bowl now.
Okay. All right. So, 7 Seahawks to the Pro Bowl this year. And I think there are some interesting selections. Let me put it that way.
Well, let's start off with the guys who were selected, Adam. And one of those guys, we'll talk about the guys that, you know, kind of no-brainers, right? Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, Russell Wilson, and Cam Chancellor, Michael Bennett. All those guys, right? You kind of expected to be Pro Bowl candidates. Bobby Wagner, another one of those guys. And then you have Tyler Lockett, the rookie return specialist, making it among all those kind of veteran players for this team.
Boy, this might be blasphemy, and people are probably going to hate me, but I'm not sure that Sherman and Wagner and Earl are having Pro Bowl years.
Yeah.
I mean, when you talk about popularity contest, especially Bobby, like, he's been fine, but I don't think he's been Pro Bowl level. I mean, when you compare his play to KJ Wright, it's night and day. KJ Wright's been amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, though, as far as, are there any other standout middle linebackers where you go, that guy should be in over a guy like Bobby Wagner?
Keekly.
Well, Keekly's in.
There's one right there.
He's made it already.
Well, I know. I guess I'd have to look at the full roster and say, all right, there's guys that he didn't deserve to get the nod over. But, yeah, I mean, solid.
Stop being down
names
on this team just because it's not, you know, they have the number two defense instead of the number one defense, Adam. Stop it.
Somebody's got to pick the nits, Brandon. They won't pick themselves.
No, you don't have to be the one, I promise.
Oh, I don't? But no. Who is the one then?
I know what you say about popularity contests, though, because Marshawn Lynch got in as an alternate. And you know, there were 5 alternates. Russell Okung, another one of those guys, in as an alternate on the offensive line. And to me, maybe they aren't alternate type. You know, with Marshawn going down to injuries, he hasn't had quite the season that he had in the past. Maybe not a Pro Bowl level season, but he has been injured. So I think he gets in on name recognition, and, you know, not just name recognition, but historical performance, right? And but to me, I'm fine with these guys making Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor. You know, those are your 3 Legion of Boom guys, and they've made a name for themselves.
With Cam missing, what, 5 or 6 weeks now total?
Yeah.
Of games? I mean, nearly half the season, and he's a starting Pro Bowler? I get it. I understand it. That's why the All-Pro means so much more, I think, when it's all said and done. But good for these guys. I mean, it's awesome to see 7 Seahawks in the Pro Bowl, no doubt. Actually, it'll be awesome to see 7 Seahawks not go to the Pro Bowl because they're going to be going to the Super Bowl. That's going to be awesome.
Hey, I haven't missed the Pro Bowl and not seeing and seeing a Pro Bowl with no Seahawks in it. That doesn't bother me at all. It's been just fine the last couple of years. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I'm totally okay with it. And look, another alternate that we didn't talk about is Stephen Hauschka. And,
yeah.
And Cliff Averill was an alternate as well. And that's a huge snub right there for me.
Yeah, and there were just so many guys at the defensive end position, right, that you say, well, that guy should be in, that guy should be in. And there's just, in terms of defensive ends, there's so many.
There are, but he's playing lights out this year.
I agree.
He might be the best rusher this year.
He might be more deserving than Michael Bennett this year, just the way he's been playing. And it's hard to argue which one of those guys helps out the other one more, though, right? They're kind of a tandem in that sense, that when the offensive line decides to account for one more over the other, then the other one's going to beat you.
Yeah, and Bennett's been an absolute beast this year. I think he's a 100% legitimate Pro Bowler. I mean, if he doesn't make it, who does? Yeah. At that point. And no, really the two to me were Averill and KJ Wright. KJ Wright is one of the best outside linebackers in football. You could argue him as top three.
Yeah.
And somehow doesn't make the Pro Bowl this year.
I think that has to do with so many of those 3-4 outside linebackers, you know, that are able to get the sacks, able to put up the stats. It feels like those are the guys that tend to get those outside linebacker spots, right?
Yeah. That is true. And it's kind of a shame because, again, there's your popularity contest, right? Somebody just looks down the line and says, oh, that guy has X amount of sacks, X amount of sacks, X amount of sacks, and that's how they get voted in. And so it's a bit of a joke show in a way, but the idea, I mean, what is this? Is this Russell's fourth? Every year he's been at least a Pro Bowler or an alternate, correct?
Right, I think so.
I mean, that's unbelievable right there. I mean, it's a good thing he's not elite. Otherwise, he would have been voted twice every year. To get in or something, you know. I mean, he's because he's obviously not elite to do that.
They wouldn't allow him. They would make him play that weekend leading up to the Super Bowl if he were that elite.
Yeah, exactly. So, but Tyler Lockett on his rookie year getting in as a returner, that's pretty darn cool.
That's really cool. Darren Sproles is the other guy, and so when you compare the Tyler Lockett to a guy that's been doing it for that long at that position, that's pretty cool.
It's very cool. So good on him. And really, with the performance that he's been putting up as a receiver as of late, it's nice to see him get that nod and a little bit of recognition because he has been a difference maker, whether it's kickoffs or as a wide receiver. And Doug Baldwin being named an alternate as well.
That's right.
And good for Doug, man. This is a guy, this year he's toned it down with the angry stuff, or at least as far as how much he's talking to the media about it.
Yeah.
And being underrated and all that. I think it still festers there for him, but for him to even get an alternate nod, like, good deal. Like, finally.
So was KJ Wright an alternate as well? I know the Seahawks had 5 alternates.
Well, not according to... No, the 5 were Averill, Baldwin, Hauschka, Lynch, and Okun.
Oh, Lynch, right. Yeah, we mentioned that.
Yeah, so no on KJ Wright.
Yeah, but that's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the guys that's playing on an elite level, according to Pro Football Focus. His numbers are off the charts. But, you know, whatever. I mean, because who knows? Oh, and guess what for KJ Wright? It's not all bad for KJ right now in the world. KJ's having himself a pretty good week.
He had a good week.
I know I made fun of the word engaged a little bit earlier. But KJ Wright proposes to the lady. She says yes. I wonder if he went to Jared.
Sorry, ladies. KJ Wright's off the market.
Yeah, that's a big blow to the single men out, or the pool of single men out there. Like, that's a quality bachelor taken off the market.
I know.
Yeah.
Another one down. That just makes it more likely that you'll find the one now, Adam.
You know, and that's one thing. Maybe I was going to leave this for the second half show, but I'll just get into it quickly. I started the show thinking that at some point, one of your really cute 12 girls would ride in and be like, oh, Adam, you're so smart about the Seahawks and funny and really, you know, marginally handsome, but I can look past that. I'll move to Montana and hang out with you. No, not one proposal. And like, so really, I'm disappointed. It's 100 episodes in, and not one, not even a wink. Like, I don't even know what the it's frustrating. I thought there would be more game that could be ran here with the Seahawkers podcast.
Oh, you know what might be the problem, Evan? You don't have your own email that we put out to the Lady 12s. You know, so if you go, if you email to adam@seahawkerspodcast.com, that'll just go right to Adam. Then I don't even have to see it. So if you're worried about me just seeing something like that and you don't want to be embarrassed, you just want it for Adam's eyes only, adam@seahawkerspodcast.com.
There it is. There it is. So
I got your back, buddy.
We all know that, ladies, when you wear the Seahawks, the ladies' jerseys, the fitted ones, we've talked about this before, it increases your hotness 2 points just automatically right there. Yeah. So be sure to do that. so, yeah, there's the ridiculousness right there at the end of the episode that we give you for or been giving you for the last 99. Definitely didn't want to leave that out for episode 100.
No, can't do it. You can't change things up at all. You just have to you gotta be consistent. And that's what we're trying to do here. So speaking of consistency, we'll be back with our Do Better and Better at Life. And we're back to episode 100 of the Seahawkers podcast. And I think with it being the 100th episode, I think it's important we thank Weehawk and the 12 Train for all the tunes that we bumped through the show. You can go to ReverbNation.com, search for the 12 Train, and you can find those tracks right from there. Download them and play them in their entirety, all you want.
Yeah, it's been awesome. We really do appreciate that. It's added... I guess there's something to a show's music, right?
Right.
Like whenever you fire up one of your favorite podcasts and you start to hear their intro music, like it's something you come to expect, and it just it's a part of it, and it's a part of the fabric of it. And so for them to allow us to do that, just awesome.
Definitely. So we want to get into some calls. We got some emails, more email, and some Do Better and Better at Life. I want to start with a call, Adam, from Dave Bloomquist, Hong Kong Hawk.
Hey, Brandon. Hey, Adam. This is Dave Bloomquist, the Hong Kong Hawk here. It is a lovely morning here in Hong Kong and basking in the glow of the Seahawks' fifth victory in a row and the trip to the playoffs, and couldn't come at a better time, as I want to congratulate you both for your 100th podcast. Been with you the whole time, and I'm glad to be part of that family, and I look forward to years and years more of great entertainment. You guys are doing a great job. Team's doing a great job. All is well. Merry Christmas and go Hawks.
So that was awesome. Thank you so much, Dave.
Merry Christmas to you too, Dave.
Yeah. Just to know, I mean, he's been listening forever. Just to kind of hear from you guys how much you appreciate it now and then, it makes a difference. It makes a difference for us. That no doubt about it.
Always great to hear that coming from the phone calls. So thanks to Dave for putting a call in. And then we got a couple more emails here, Adam.
Yeah, what number do you call if you want to have a phone call on the air?
253-235-9041. And the emails come in to gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com. And if you haven't already, you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Seahawkers Podcast, and on Twitter @SeahawkersPod. So, yeah, those are the ways to get in touch with the show.
Yeah. Do it or be lame.
On to emails. This one from Anthony in Mesa, Arizona. Love the show. Go Hawks. Thanks, Anthony.
No, awesome. Hey, that's all I needed to hear right there.
Hey.
Just love the show. Go Hawks. Yeah, that'd be great.
I love it. This one's good, too.
Yeah.
Pamela in San Francisco says, I am so happy I found your podcast this year. I look forward to the new episode every week. Let me just say, I was completely sold on the podcast when the Bengals recap started out with "What the catfish?" As a 12 deep in Niners territory, I have often felt envious of the Seahawks fans who can watch, celebrate, and or lament together. I'm so used to getting dirty looks or mean comments when I'm sporting my Seahawks gear. One time someone even yelled at me from their apartment window while I was walking down the street, but now I feel less lonely listening to other comments from 12s all around the world. Thank you for helping me get pumped before each game and making my experience as a 12 away from home that much better. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. That's awesome. So last two emails, one from Arizona, one from San Francisco. obviously both in enemy territory.
I know.
I'm so glad we could be a lifeline to both those folks. It's hilarious to me.
I wish we could go around the horn and have a St. Louis Seahawks fan email in, but I'm not sure if they have any football fans in that town.
Well, no, they do. They just they can't be a fan of that team that resides there, I think is basically how it works.
Well, they're, you know, Cardinals are a big deal, so.
Yeah, okay.
Here's one from Mark in the East Bay, so another one from California. My son and I had our annual trip to Seattle this weekend to see the Browns game. This was our fifth trip to a home game, as well as the occasional game down here when the Hawks have played the Niners or Raiders. As my son always insists, the home games are much better because of the atmosphere at the Clink. We were seated next to two Browns fans who currently live in Charlotte and were on a mission to visit each ground in the league. The Clink was number 10 along their journey. They really enjoyed the experience despite the score, helped by what appeared to be an unofficial buy one, get one free offer on the beers just for being a Browns fan. Let's face it, you need anything you can get given their history. Big kudos to the stadium security guards who won these Browns fans over by checking with them to see if they were being treated well by the Seahawkers, which of course they were. As usual, the fan atmosphere, some great banter with fans of both teams, and for us, 5 wins out of our 5 visits to the Clink. To make things even better, by some quirk of nature this weekend, I managed to pick almost every game right, so looking forward to a mention for a complete catfish. A question for you, if the Hawks get to the NFC Championship or further, what do you think the chances are for Pete Carroll winning Coach of the Year? Given the holdouts, injuries, reforming the O-line, and current form of the team, surely he must have a chance. He's been robbed by Mr. Arians enough times already. Thanks for the show. I love the insights, Adam's rants, and the top banter. Best wishes for the postseason to you, the team, and the fans, both Hawks and Browns, from Mark in Danville, California.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm glad Mark had a great time at the game, and they had a fun game to go to watch the Seahawks just kind of pile it on when you make that kind of trip all the way up from California. So that was awesome. But to answer his question about Pete Carroll, No. Because there's a coach that's most likely going to go undefeated for the regular season. And so that's that.
Yeah. Carolina's coach. And if it doesn't go to Carolina, it would probably go to Bruce Arians again, because everybody seems to love him and his funny hats that he wears to the games.
Okay, B.A.
Yep. He's got the cool nickname.
No, it's not cool. It's the lamest. I hate that nickname. Ugh.
There's only one B.A. He's on the A team.
Yeah, exactly. Get it right, people. But I just think it's a long shot for Pete. And sure, it is a bummer, but I'm pretty sure Pete's been fairly happy with the results of his coaching through his tenure as the Seahawks head coach. I don't know that Coach of the Year really matters to him in any way, shape, or form.
No. I think he would rather be the guy holding up the Super Bowl trophy at the end of the season than get any of those other accolades. But I know for fans, I want to see it happen. I think it should happen. I think it should have already happened. And it's a little bit of a shame that he hasn't been recognized as Coach of the Year just in one of these last 6 years with the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more there, man.
Here's one from Josh in the UK. Once again, we see Russell Wilson doing Russell Wilson things. If he doesn't win MVP, I'm going to hurt somebody. The guy is just unbelievable. His movement, decisions, elusiveness, speed, accuracy, inside the pocket, outside of the pocket. And I could keep going and going. Along with Doug and Tyler turning up each week, this team is starting to look Super Bowl standard again. I don't want to get carried away because I know the Ravens and Brown are terrible, but offense and defense are there now. This level of play is good enough to beat any team in the NFL, and doubters are slowly beginning to disappear. Who needs Jimmy? And Mike Pettine needs to reevaluate his definition of an elite quarterback. I'm sure Adam has a strong opinion on his comments. Lastly, I just wanted to say thanks for giving up your time to make this podcast and brighten my week. We are back, and being a Seahawks fan is fun again. Go Hawks!
Awesome, man. Well, it's been more fun to do the pod, no doubt about that. And
that's right.
I think we talked a little bit about Pettine's comments before, but maybe. I don't know, like, if we need to alert Homeland Security or something, because he's probably going to have to hurt somebody Because Russell's not winning MVP.
No,
like,
no.
It's not
happening. There's this one quarterback who's about to go 16-0, and he's probably going to win MVP.
Yeah, because that's how ridiculous NFL awards are.
You know what, though? Since we had our Russell versus Cam show, Cam has he's done just as much to win that award as the weeks have gone on as Russell has.
Yeah, I mean, he's played really well as well, but it's not like Russell's taken a step back. If anything, he's only played even more lights out. So I can understand the frustration. But again, I kind of like the idea that these guys are getting overlooked a little bit this year. I mean, I know they got the 7 Pro Bowlers and all that, but the idea that when they get to the playoffs, that everybody's counting them out a little bit. They're a wild card team, and they didn't have that year, and Marshawn's not there, and blah, 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 blah. I like it. I think that's what this team needs to really have that focus. And I think it took them getting to the point that they did, a 2-4 and having an 8% chance to go to the playoffs, for them to shake that Super Bowl hangover. I mean, I think it took that long. It took the idea that they had gotten so far down and everybody counted them out that they had a new thing to focus on.
Yeah.
Rather than what had happened the year before. So, they're not going to win those awards, but I think that little extra motivation is going to be good.
You know, one thing that kind of, you talk about cherry picking stats a little bit earlier in the show, and it reminds me of what I saw with Cam Newton and becoming the first quarterback to throw for more than 300 yards, rush for more than 100 yards, and throw 5 touchdown passes. Well, you know, if you just go with the first two, he's just the second guy to throw for 300 yards and rush for 100 yards, because Russell Wilson's the only guy that had done that. And yes, he didn't throw 5 touchdown passes in that game, but still, side by side, you can give a little bit of love to Russell Wilson there too. Put those guys next to each other as the only guys that have done that.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, just like you said, it's the cherry picking thing to make your case, and everybody does it. And you know, in a league,
and we do it too.
In an era where the stats are so abundant, this is what you're going to get.
Still, though, you know, one guy that we didn't mention again, Doug Baldwin, and his stats too, because we brought him out last year as the only guy to have as many touchdowns in that short span of 3 games. Jerry Rice, the only other guy, but you know, they went a little bit further with some of the stats that I've seen, and as far as guys that have had multiple touchdowns over the span of 4 games, Doug Baldwin, you know, with 10 over the last 4 games, and to be able to do it in as few catches as he has. The other guys on this list, one name is Art Powell, which people probably don't know because, you know, that was in 1963. But the other guys on that list with multiple touchdowns, 2 or more over or as many touchdowns, you know, Jerry Rice had 10 touchdowns over a 4-game span in 1987. Calvin Johnson had 8 touchdowns over a 4-game span in 2011, and Chris Carter in 95 had 8 touchdowns over a 4-game span, and those are the only guys on that list. Just shows you what Russell Wilson and Doug Baldwin have been doing over these past few games.
Yeah, it really is off the charts, and I mean, just drink in some of those names.
Those
guys can all play.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, all pretty good. All right, Adam, what do you say we get on to our Do Better and Better at Life?
All right, man. Well, I kind of felt like for the 100th episode, I should have a really epic rant for my Do Better. But this one will be a bit more subdued, but it's still just the absurdity of it is unbelievable to me. I don't know. This is a football podcast, obviously, so maybe some of you won't recognize this name when I throw it out. But if I say Stephon Marbury, Brandon, is that a guy that you kind of remember at all? Does that ring a bell?
That's a guy I know. He played for the Knicks, I think, right?
Yeah, at one point. He started out his career with the Timberwolves. He played with Kevin Garnett. He was an insanely talented young guy. A freaking basket case. Like, the guy is emotionally unhinged and just all about me. His nickname was Starberry because he wanted everybody to know how big of a star he is. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, it's all about Stephon. And, I mean, he really derailed the Timberwolves as they were an up-and-coming team when Kevin Garnett was young in his career. Well, he bounced around the NBA a little bit. Finally gets kicked out of the NBA because nobody can stand working with this guy. And you know the mark of somebody who's a fairly unstable is when they get a head tattoo? Like, that's when you know he has like a giant star on one side of his head, right? So he eventually goes to China. And there's a big, basketball is very popular in China. They have a very large pro league. And he plays in China for a while. And of course, against the much lesser competition, you know, he looks pretty good. And so he played over there for numerous years. Mm-hmm. But still a head case. This guy imploded so many different teams. It's not even funny. He was always just a train wreck. And now, in case you want to relive all of the amazing highlights of Stephon Marbury's career, you just travel to Beijing and visit the 300 square foot museum dedicated to all things Stephon Marbury.
Stephon Marbury has his own Hall of Fame.
He has his own Hall of Fame, and it's just him. And the government built it for him. Government funds were appropriated to build the Stephon Marbury Hall of Fame, where you can see things like some of his childhood memorabilia, some of his NBA highlights, and most importantly, a lot of his Chinese League triumphs that you can go and visit. There's even a wax freaking model of him with the star tattooed on its head that you can go and see in the Stephon Marbury Museum. It is unfreaking believable. And of course, he's like, oh, this is like one of the greatest moments of my life. I can't believe that I'm being honored in this way. You're honoring a freaking basket case who was marginal at best in the NBA when it all came down to it. His career was a half a dumpster fire. Now he's got his own Hall of Fame in Beijing, 300 square feet. China, do better.
You know, that isn't even an original idea for Stephon Marbury to have his own Stephon Marbury Hall of Fame. Wide receiver, former NFL wide receiver Andre Rison, didn't he create the Andre Rison Hall of Fame?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah,
so. Yeah. No, they call this the House of Marbury.
Okay.
That's what it's called, yes.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I'm sure the fives of people will be, you know, flocking.
It might be. He's a big deal there, though, Adam, you got to admit, so.
I don't know, man. Playing for the Beijing Ducks. That's where he found his success.
Well, speaking of people that lost their mind, you know, there was the do better mention earlier in the show about Odell Beckham getting a do better nod. And I had considered this for mine, but he did get what he deserved. He got a one game suspension. I thought it was appropriate. I thought if he got away with just a fine, it would have been an appropriate time for a do better. But clearly lost his mind in that game, got what was coming to him with a one game suspension and a team that down the stretch, they need that guy to try and get into the playoffs. And now I'm not sure if the Giants do it at this point, but with my do better this week, Adam, there's so many guys I could tag this to this week. So I'm just going to say former Rams quarterback Kurt Warner, since he was the last guy I saw talking about this. And we've kind of talked about this a lot throughout the show, right? About Russell Wilson and this idea of this question of is Russell Wilson elite? Why are people so hesitant to say Russell Wilson is elite? In four seasons, he's done things that no other quarterback has done in that amount of time. More wins in his first four seasons, second highest passer rating among NFL quarterbacks in history. He's had his team in the Super Bowl twice already, made the playoffs every year. Now he's without Marshawn, without Jimmy Graham, and he's had three touchdowns and no interceptions in five straight games, Adam. What's with the amount of time qualifier in the league for a quarterback to be considered elite? Are these people holding out hope that he's going to somehow meet their original expectations that he was too short to play in the NFL? You can't add a fifth face to the Mount Rushmore of elite quarterbacks in the league right now. Why is there the hesitation? We aren't inducting him into the Hall of Fame yet. People considered Matt Ryan, Adam, of all people, to be among the elite quarterbacks not too long ago. And he shouldn't. Well, I know. And I think there's a lot of people in your area now that are kind of stripping him of, well, you're not stripping him. You never gave it to him. But the other people are saying, no, you know, we're a little bit too early on calling Matt Ryan elite. So it's okay to be wrong, but you sound like you're a nincompoop if you're clinging to the idea that he has to be to the stature of a future Hall of Famer to attach the term elite to Russell Wilson's name. If I hear another guy, Adam, say he's not an elite quarterback, but he's playing at an elite level right now, It's going to drive me crazy. Listen to what you're saying. He is elite. Do better.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, man. And the thing that I wonder about is you brought up all of the things that Russell has accomplished, right? And I'm thinking of another quarterback who really didn't start making his mark even till his fourth year in the league. He didn't even get a chance to start.
Yeah.
Been to two Super Bowls, won one, lost another. But right after he won his first one, he was the greatest quarterback in the league, and that was Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
I mean, Russell has accomplished everything that Aaron Rodgers has.
In his first 4 years.
They've put up the same amount of production. They've taken their teams to two Super Bowls. They've each won one. They've each got one chip. And one guy's easily elite, and I'm Mount Rushmore. And yet the other guy, he can't be put in the same breath yet. Still can't.
Not enough room.
I don't get it.
Not enough room because, you know, there's Aaron Rodgers, there's Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and I'm probably forgetting the fourth one, but, you know, they're out there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the DCH had asked me, too. He's like, I hate to even bring this up, but, I mean, is race a factor in some of this? And I was like, man, I don't even know anymore. Like, you're running out of things that could be a legitimate factor. You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
Like, there comes a point where you start to wonder, but then... You know, Cam's getting all the love that he's getting this year, and
I think part of it, and you've brought this up before. I think part of it is that they do have multiple skill sets, so they're not doing it in the same way as traditional quarterbacks have in the past, and so I think it's just taken some time for, you know. The good thing was I did hear Pete Prisco mention Russell Wilson along with Cam Newton as people who he thought were in the conversation for MVP this year. That was a good moment from Prisco to hear that.
Did he have a stroke on Planet Prisco?
I know.
Like, that's the only thing that I can figure out.
I know. Happened. It's crazy. So, yeah. Well, Adam, can you believe we've done this 100 times in March 2016, it will be the 3-year anniversary of when Richard Sherman went on First Take and said to Skip Bayless, "I'm better at life than you." And ever since we started the show, you know, in that summer following those comments in the preseason of the 2013 Super Bowl season, here we are, still mentioning our better at life picks each week.
Well, that's a testament to you, Brandon, for coming up with the concept and making it the longest running segment on the show easily. And pretty cool. That's the tradition. I can't believe it's been 100. I really can't. But I think for my better at life than Skip Bayless this week, I think it's a good one for the 100th episode because it's a real human interest thing. And my better at life, it's a little bit of a co-better at life, but it's mainly for wide receiver Joe Anderson.
Mm.
You've probably never heard of Joe Anderson.
No.
I honestly hadn't until I read the article. And he had played with the Bears a couple years back, a guy from a small school, and just has the dream to play football in the National Football League. And what he's been doing over the last few weeks, he lives in the Houston area, is for every game, every home game in Houston, he was standing outside the stadium as the teams would pull up with a sign in cardboard written on the cardboard that said, not homeless, but starving for success. We'll run routes for food, whatever it takes, underdog, you know, believe, you know, just all of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, those were all hashtags. Just said it, like... Taking it to that level, like week in, week out, like not giving up on his dream in wanting to play. And Brandon Marshall had played with him in Chicago and had tweeted out a picture of him and just given him all the props for, you know, having the humility to be able to go out there and do that to try to. I can't imagine doing that. I can't imagine doing that and being able to suck up that much pride to go out there just to try to pursue your dream. It's unbelievable. And this week, the New York Jets have signed him to their practice squad after giving him a workout. And he must have been impressive enough to actually make that happen. And for a guy who's pursuing his dream and doing it as a salt of the earth guy, mm-hmm. there's no better person in my mind to get the nomination on the 100th show for who's better at life than Skip Bayless than Joe Anderson, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Now, I like it. I did see that story, too. And but that was before I heard that he had gotten picked up to a practice squad. So I'm glad to see that because, yes, I've seen those pictures of him holding up his sign. And good. That's one of those guys where you do root for and hope that he makes it off the practice squad and is able to, you know, kind of have that become a defining moment in his life.
Absolutely. Just really cool. And best of luck to him, man. I really hope that it all works out for him in the end.
Well, speaking of defining moments in our lives, it's been a milestone week for the Seahawks, Adam. Pete Carroll picked up his 100th win as the Seahawks coach. Russell Wilson threw his 100th touchdown pass in that game against the Browns. And the Seahawks have locked up a playoff spot for four straight years. And we mentioned, you know, the Seahawks Pro Bowl players, 7 guys, 5 alternates. We talked about KJ Wright being engaged. But even better than all that, it's a milestone day for me. My wife and I were married 14 years ago today. And we're approaching a time in our lives, Adam, where we've been together longer than we haven't. So that's pretty cool. So I'm going a bit personal on this one. My wife, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Well, I have to agree. She lets you do this nonsense with me, and I couldn't appreciate that more. And I know without her support, I mean, she was helping us just today test out some stuff for the show, which was really cool. And you know, and congratulations to you guys, man, to last that long. Good luck, man. Good luck. I don't know how you do it. You guys must both be the most understanding people in the world. I only lasted 6 years at that marriage thing. So just kudos to you guys. And you guys have built a really cool life for yourselves. And we're all rooting for you, man.
Yeah, the fact that we are recording on our anniversary, it's
right.
A testament to her believing in what we do and allowing me to do this nonsense on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, exactly. And so thanks a lot. Better at life than Skip. Emily.
There we go. All right, Adam. That knocks down our 100th show. I know we were trying to get a guest for folks on our 100th show. That may still, it won't be a part of this show, obviously, but it may still happen this week. I'm working that, and with kind of all of the, like we said, all the milestones with the playoffs, you know, the Seahawks making a spot with all the Pro Bowl announcements coming. It's been kind of a crazy week, so we might still be able to make that happen sometime here in this next week.
Yeah, pretty excited about that possibility, but pretty cool that you've been able to kind of shake the tree here and see what we can get. And I think it'll be fun if it all materializes.
Yeah, and if not, you know, we got 100 shows in the books, so that's cool too.
Yeah, yeah. Cool, man. You know, 100 shows, and the thing is at the end of the day, Brandon, there's really only one thing left to say.
Yes, yes, there is. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.